Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are and should be proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. First, we'll talk with Army vet Allison Jaslow, the chief executive officer of the Iraq and Afghan Veterans of America. Then we'll review the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. So, it's an honor to welcome to the show Allison Jaslow. She's an Army vet who served in combat, earning, among other things, a Bronze Star. She's also the first woman to serve as CEO of the Iraq and Afghan Veterans of America. Welcome to the show, Allison. Glad you could join us.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about your time in the Army. When and why did you join? Where did you serve? Obviously, you served in Iraq and Afghanistan. I know you were a captain and you left the service. Just talk to us about your time in the Army.
So when it comes to down to why I joined, you know, it actually goes back to when I was in eighth grade. I'm the only success story of career day that I know of. I ended up on Fort Myer, which is the military base that's connected to Arlington National Cemetery, was essentially voluntold to go there. I had asked to go other places on career day for a field trip, but that's where I wound up. And, you know, for those of you who've been there, it's a ceremonial post and it's hard not to get swept up in your patriotism, should you have any, while you're there. And from that day forward, joining the Army was my dream. And, you know, I wanted that more than I cared about where I went to school. You know, I had thought about West Point along the way, but ultimately ended up getting an ROTC scholarship to a small military school in rural Missouri named Wentworth Military Academy. That scholarship sent me there for 2 years and then to the University of Central Missouri, which is just up the road from it, for the second 2 years of my college experience. And I actually arrived on campus. I graduated in the spring of 2000, and I arrived on campus in the fall of 2000. Of course, my sophomore year, what my service would be fundamentally changed post 9/11, was commissioned in 2004. Very quickly found myself on a plane to Kuwait, headed north into Iraq the day after Thanksgiving that same year. I spent a year in Taji, Iraq, from November 2004 through October of 2005 is when I returned stateside to Fort Carson, and then deployed again to Iraq in January of 2007, which was just before the surge was announced, and ended up staying there for 15 months until April of 2008. It was during that deployment that I decided that though the Army was my dream when I was 13, that maybe I didn't want to do it for a career. And so I made the decision to get out and, you know, have done all the many things that I've done between then and now being CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
What branch were you in?
I was a school-trained quartermaster, which very quickly became a multifunctional logistician. So when I was first deployed, I originally assumed a warehousing mission, but three out of the four warehouses that I was responsible for became contracted by Kellogg Brown and Root. And so my platoon, I was detailed to a reserve unit that's actually from Saginaw, Michigan. It was a reserve unit that pulled from across the Midwest. So my soldiers were from everywhere from Chicago to Minnesota to Wisconsin to also, you know, of course, those soldiers who were in Saginaw / Bay City, Michigan. But my entire platoon, which did have a warehousing mission, within 60 days became a force protection platoon that did base force protection and then also convoy security, which we called gun trucks during that deployment. I remained with the logistics battalion. So when I deployed again as a staff officer, I was still with the logistics unit that did the full swath of logistics support for the battlefield, but was the battalion adjutant during that deployment. And so I was part of the battalion command group and kind of the right hand that dealt with personnel issues and public affairs issues for our battalion commander.
So it sounds like you weren't bored.
I was definitely not bored at all.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Allison Jaslow from IAVA. So you had a vision of being in the Army and you fulfilled it and then went on to do something else. How did you find out about what attracted you? How did you get involved in IAVA?
So when I got out, I spent time in politics in a variety of different ways. I have spent time on political campaigns. I've been a press secretary on both sides of Capitol Hill. I also worked in the White House communications office. And when I got my boss reelected when I was a chief of staff, in the House of Representatives was the point in my career where I know I didn't want to be a chief of staff for life the way that some people do. I had spent, you know, 7 or 8 years getting real political chops and comms chops. And then, you know, just happened to find my way to veterans advocacy. And I was one of the first staffers. This is my second time at IAVA. I first was at the organization back in 2016 to 2018. And I was one of the first people who came into the organization with both, you know, a real solid set of political seasoned chops and was also a vet myself. My IAVA had either civilians who had, you know, comms chops, knew their way around Capitol Hill, knew politics, or, you know, there are vets who essentially like learned on the fly at IAVA, but the body of experience that they brought to the organization was their lived experience as a veteran. And so it was, you know, two things. I started as the political director, but in DC and very quickly got promoted to be our founder's number two, probably within 4 months of joining the organization. But I would say, you know, what was true then and is still true now is it's extraordinarily rewarding for me to basically marry both of these chapters of my career, but also leverage a skill set that I have on behalf of an organization that I love to help it succeed and thrive, but also to help advocate and get the backs of our fellow vets. You know, I think because I played the inside game, I can be better at the outside game with that knowledge. So
that makes
it's a true
sense.
Privilege. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That's logical. So you have found yourself now in a position that for you right now is the dream position. That's where to be. It's taken the knowledge you've gained and the different things you've done and lets you focus them and feel like you're literally accomplishing the goals that you'd like to see. Am I reading this right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't, not to get super hokey, but I'm somebody who felt called to serve and initially envisioned that in uniform, serving my country. But I've, you know, iterated on that throughout my career. And, you know, I very much felt called to return to IAVA a little over a year ago to help an organization that I already spent time and grade in into its next chapter. IAVA is turning 20 years old this fall. And I, you know, would like to see it have a bright next 20 years that can mirror the impact that we've made up to this point. And that, you know, both I believe will be meaningful and fulfilling, but is something that I felt, you know, called to sort of step up and do.
Well, you know, what do you want more in life than to find something that lets you use your abilities to accomplish goals that are important to you?
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I feel very grateful.
Okay, IAVA is, it's pretty obvious, Iraq and Afghan veterans. It's their organization. It's like other veterans organizations, the American Legion or whatever. But this is for that group of veterans. What are the requirements that you just have served in the military during the time of that time, or do you have to have served in country, or what are the requirements to be a member?
So anybody can be a member of IAVA. You know, we have supporters who haven't served or didn't serve during our generation who are uniquely interested in seeing our generation advocated for. You know, that said, we do go through a process of verifying our veteran members because that data set specifically helps me help IAVA continue to be the leading voice of the post-9/11 generation of veterans. You know, we engage in research where we ask our IAVA veterans their opinions on a range of issues, not just veterans issues of the day. And that allows us to make sure that the veteran voice is in the most important conversations that are happening in America right now. But anybody can sign up at IAVA.org to be a member.
Okay, that makes sense. So anybody who wants to support Iraq and Afghan veterans, you don't have to be one. There's more to discuss about IAVA, and Allison's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends. I want you to go halfway down each time, do about 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
The U.S. is more than $32 trillion in debt, a number that is going up by the second.
Meanwhile, our country faces expanding global threats while our military readiness is consumed with unnecessary engagements elsewhere.
If we want to be safe in the future, we need to get our debt and spending under control. Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Army vet Allison Jaslow, the CEO of Iraq and Afghan Veterans of America. Okay, Allison, you talked about that anybody who wants to support Iraq and Afghan vets can join. If you are actually a veteran who served in there, that's special because that's who you're actually recommending and advocating for. Am I reading that right?
Definitely. And the, you know, majority of our members are people who spent boots on ground time in either Iraq or Afghanistan. You know, it's important to note, though, that we also try to advocate for the entire post 9/11 generation of veterans, which, as the war on terror has evolved, you know, has troops in harm's way in places like Syria and the Horn of Africa.
Uh-huh.
But yes, largely our members are people who have spent time, you know, in Operation Enduring Freedom or Operation Iraqi Freedom.
So at your level, what you're clearly doing is advocating, particularly with the federal government, executive branch of Congress, to get laws passed that make sense, that move things in the right direction. Do you do things below that level? I'm sure must be chapters, there must be state groups. Am I right? Am I reading this right?
You know, largely our advocacy has happened at the federal level, in part because for most of IAVA's existence, we have sought to increase the support that the Department of Veterans Affairs specifically gives to our generation of vets. So to give you a good example, the GI Bill, when our generation was originally returning, taking off the uniform, going back into civilian society, was peanuts compared to what the World War II veterans were awarded in terms of their benefit. You know, if you index for both cost of living, but also like the cost of an education or a four-year college education. And so one of the, you know, landmark achievements of our organization was helping to pass the post 9/11 GI Bill, which brought the benefit up to the level of what World War II veterans got when they were getting out of the service. That has to happen at the federal level. It is a federal benefit through the Department of Veterans Affairs. You know, that said, we have done some state level advocacy. It's been a little more scattershot versus intentional. And it does take leadership from some of our most engaged members on ground to help make it happen. I have a very small team and we already punch above our weight class. And I think being active in all 50 states would be a challenge unless we built a little more capacity at this point. But we have taken opportunities to weigh in on legislative initiatives in the states from time to time.
Okay, but your primary focus is the federal government and doing that federally. That makes sense.
Yep.
Okay. One of the things that this show is in the process of doing right now is promoting and standing up for female veterans. I know that's something that you do too. Can you take a minute and share your thoughts on that?
Yes. Well, you know, essentially, advocating for women veterans is a part of my life's work at this point. When I was last at Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America in 2017, I helped conceive of, launch, and then ultimately was the face of what we called our She Who Born the Battle campaign. She Who Born the Battle was a play on words. At the time, the VA's motto was to care for him who shall have borne the battle and his widow and his orphan. And we made the point that if the VA's own motto doesn't recognize women, how can we expect, you know, the VA culture and system itself, or even America, to recognize women veterans fully. We've made huge advances when it comes to getting the federal government to invest in services that help adequately support women veterans at the VA since we launched that campaign in 2017. But I would say that the work that still remains is a lot of culture change work, which, you know, I'm huge credit to my board for picking a woman CEO, because I think the more people see and hear from a woman in a leadership role, the more that it becomes believable that there are women veterans out there. It's not as though people don't believe women veterans exist in the abstract, but when you close your eyes and think of a veteran, you probably think of somebody who is Vietnam era, straight white male versus, you know, we've had other demographic shifts in our generation. But, you know, women veterans are just all too often an afterthought still. So I think continuing to do work to change the way America sees its veterans is something that I am committed to. And I'm, you know, glad to hear that shows like yours are committed to the same.
Well, I got this funny feeling that we all love America and we all serve. And mm-hmm. therefore, we all need to be treated equally. I know it's a weird feeling, but somehow it sort of makes sense to me. Anyway, this is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Allison Jaslow. Allison, this is the Memorial Day weekend show. I know that you are promoting a moment of silence on Memorial Day. Talk to us about why. What's all that about? Take us there.
Well, a lot of our work is meaningful and impactful, but I don't know that there's anything more important that we do than launch our Go Silent campaign every year at the beginning of the month of May in the lead up to Memorial Day, in part because we don't want people to just remember the fallen on Memorial Day, but we also want them to be reminded of the meaning behind Memorial Day, which I think takes a sustained effort and a steady drumbeat up until Memorial Day to be able to do. As a part of the Go Silent campaign, we also ask our supporters and friends to make a pledge to go silent at 3 p.m. local time on Memorial Day. So again, you know, there are many of us like myself where that will be a work day and I will have a lot of opportunity to reflect on Memorial Day at official ceremonies that I'm attending. But many Americans, it will just be another day off for them if we don't challenge them and inspire them to take at least one moment to remember the meaning of the day. And so that's what our Go Silent campaign is all about.
And how much time and when are we talking about being silent?
I mean, it's just a simple moment of silence. If you pledge to go silent, we will go silent at 3 p.m. local time. And I think it can be, honestly, for each individual, as long as you need it to be. I think it just says more about being intentional and about pausing for a moment and reflecting on the meaning of the day. You know, I think the more we can get people to do that, the more the sacrifices of the fallen don't go unrecognized or forgotten.
That makes sense. Yes.
I think far too many people do. And so, you know, we're not going to be able to impact all of the millions of Americans with our organization, but the goal is, at least for our sphere of influence, to remind people about the meaning of Memorial Day, to encourage them to pledge to go silent, and then to also encourage them to tell their friends to go silent as well.
Yes, ma'am. I could not agree more with you. Thank you for making that clear, spelling it out, and I'm hoping every listener will take that as a challenge. It's our country. We need to do this, and we need to role model for the other people what we want. That's awesome. Thank you, Allison, for your comments today, for your service to our nation while in uniform, and for what you're doing now. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Diane Raver will present the movie of the month, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it's time for our movie of the month. So, of course, we're joined by our great team member, Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Welcome, Diane. You sure picked an interesting one this month.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it. Again, our goal is to have food for thought. And I thought this was a twist on an interesting subject matter. So I'll be interested to see what your folks say about this one.
Yeah, well, you know, The Life of Death. I mean, just the title. Somebody's confused here or something. And the first, I don't know, minute or so of the movie, for me, I was confused about what I was seeing. Then suddenly it all caught and clicked and was entertaining and fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, and apparently my listeners felt the same way. Here's a comment. I love this one. I never thought about death having a life, which is true. And it apparently is in New York City because the Statue of Liberty is there. People, stores, cars. So it's a real world kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So life of death, then death in black in the traditional with a sickle and everything else walks around seemingly not seen, a little bit like me. If I walk around someplace I don't know where I'm not familiar with, nobody knows or recognizes me. So I think just ignore me. Mm-hmm. Then he got hit by a car.
No. Yeah, that was something.
Now, that was sort of a wake-up call. So this
very
is
New York.
Yeah. Indeed. And then he sat on Santa's lap. I loved that.
Yeah.
One wonders what he asked for.
Well.
Again.
Maybe a puppy. Who knows?
You know, that's right. Because he's just acting like a normal human being.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that's what a normal human being, well, I don't know how many normal human being adults would do that, but
right.
Okay, whatever. Then he's writing on a blackboard. Okay. He looks at an attractive young lady. Okay, I relate to that. That's how I met you. Then he's sitting in a doctor's office. Now, why would death be in a doctor's office? Because he's just a guy doing the things guys do.
Right.
And that's the humorous and sort of message that he's just a person. He has trouble with a copy machine. Now I know he's real.
Right.
And he's smoking with some college kids. Okay. Then he visits a guy in the hospital and does him in. So he's doing his death thing.
Right.
Okay.
But trying to live a little in between. I found that interesting. And again, our goal is to have things to think about and to think about, you know, the negative space, the things in between. It's thought-provoking.
Yes. He's a creature of some kind. And he's not doing his taking people's life all the time. So he's got to do something in between.
Right.
Just like us. If you're not at your job or with your family, you're doing something.
Right.
And you a little variety is reasonable and that kind of thing. This is about the time that I was really smirking. Then he visits, he reads a book entitled How to Live.
Yeah.
That one did me. That was something else.
Doesn't the creativity of these filmmakers just blow your mind? I mean, I'm always so amazed at these wonderful themes and how beautifully they're put together. I mean, this just didn't come from nowhere. Somebody made this. It's really wonderful.
You're right. And from the perspective of somebody came up with this, came up with the idea, and then produced a movie of it.
Yeah.
That's
executed.
Wow.
And again, these are indies. Somebody's paying for these things out of their own pocket. That's the part everybody has to remember. These are not funded by any big studio situation. They're just wonderful.
They really, really show some interesting people whose minds work in a really fun way. Then he's on a surfboard.
Yeah.
Then he's kissing a pretty girl. Now, that one confused me a little bit. I don't know any pretty girls that would want to kiss death. On the other hand,
I don't know. There's some pretty strange people out there.
Different strokes for different folks.
I kiss some pretty strange people. Let's face it.
But he's acting like a guy, I mean.
Yeah.
Then he's out laying on the street, and he's seen laying on the street. Then the phone rings, and a lady answers. She's very sad. And then, I love it, there are two young deaths playing in a yard, and he's got to keep track of his kids.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's mind was really, really creative. You absolutely can't call this anything less than entertaining and fun.
Right. Even with what normally would be a not fun subject matter, I just thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And the animation was fabulous. I mean, it was just terrific.
Yeah. By taking something that is automatically not fun and making it fun, that's creativity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how cool can things get? This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're discussing the movie of the month with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. And The Life of Death, I'll probably remember that title for a long time, just to laugh about it.
Right.
Okay. We need to talk about the Garden State Film Festival, which is over for this year, but there's always one coming. And it's always in March, right?
The call for entries is open right now. So most everybody's got a filmmaker of some kind that they know or are in their family. And I would encourage all of them to submit to gsff.org for inclusion in our 2025 festival.
You know, with this kind of creativity, it just should encourage people that I couldn't do anything. Well, yes, you could. This is an example of somebody who took something that I would never have thought about in a million years and made a really entertaining movie about it. And there's got to be a lot of other people like that with that ability out there. And so this is an opportunity to actually do something about it,
right?
That idea, and then submit it so it's part of something. And it gets looked at, enjoyed, and appreciated. That's what most creative people want to do, right? Create something that is appreciated and fun.
Right. And you know, use their creative talents. We also accept scripts for a screenplay competition and also original music that was in a film of some kind somewhere. So there's all kinds of ways to be involved. And last year we had a couple of people come that decided not to go to Sundance anymore and will now come to us. So think about maybe coming out sometime in the near future. It's a lot of fun. And again, the films are just wonderful. And you really can't see them anywhere else but at a festival. So,
indeed. One more time, how do they get in touch with you?
They can go to gsff.org. And if they want to get in touch with me, it's info@gsff.org.
Thank you, Diane, for another great film and for being such a great member of the team and a great friend. This is awesome.
Well, thank you, Denny. It's always an honor and a privilege to be with you and your audience.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups, about 64 this time. I want you Ranger ready. Then stand at ease. It's that time of the year again. The U.S. Mint is making their new 2024 American Silver Eagle and American Gold Eagle coins, and there's no better time to shore up your investment in precious metals than now. Call Universal Coin and Bullion at 800-UCB-GOLD to get great prices on the finest gold and silver coins of the year. I work with Universal Coin and Bullion because they're a company that you can trust. So give them a call at 800-UCB-GOLD. That's 800-UCB-GOLD, or check them out at universalcoin.com/Denny.
Friends, Adam here, Patria Foods, U.S.-only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriafoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off, patriafoods.com. 10% off, promo code FREEDOM, and shop today.
I'm Colonel Danny Gill, and this is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin is the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a really great place to go to purchase silver and gold for an investment. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Marie, a Navy mom and a Marine mom, wants to thank all the great Americans who are serving in uniform and their families.
You're right on, Marie. We salute all those serving and recognize that the families serve too.
And Barry, an Army vet, wonders what in the world is wrong with our nation's leadership. When a nation that is a real democracy and a close ally of ours is attacked by terrorists and our friends fight back hard, and we get mad at them?
Barry, you have accurately described the problem. Our nation's leaders. We need new ones. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 28 May 1754, in the first engagement of the French and Indian War, a Virginia militia under 22-year-old Lieutenant Colonel George Washington defeated a French reconnaissance party in southwestern Pennsylvania. In a surprise attack, the Virginians killed 10 French soldiers from Fort Duquesne, including the French commander, and took 21 prisoners. Only one of Washington's men was killed. The French and Indian War was the last and most important of a series of colonial conflicts between the British and the American colonists on one side and the French and their broad network of Native American allies on the other. Fighting began in the spring of 1754, but Britain and France did not officially declare war against each other until May 1756 and the outbreak of the Seven Years' War in Europe.
I guess since neither one of us was a lieutenant colonel at 22, neither one of us is going to be president, you think?
Well, I think you're probably right, but Colonel Washington, he cut his teeth on the Seven Years' War, and hey, it worked for him.
Indeed. On 28th of May, 1917, our Navy did its first underway refueling. The USS Maumee fueled six destroyers in the North Atlantic. Lieutenant Commander Chester Nimitz served as the Maumee's executive officer and chief engineer.
And on May 27, 1941, during World War II, the British Navy sank the German battleship Bismarck in the North Atlantic near France. On February 14, 1939, the 823-foot Bismarck was launched at Hamburg. Nazi leader Adolf Hitler hoped that the state-of-the-art battleship would herald the rebirth of the German surface battle fleet. However, after the outbreak of war, Britain closely guarded ocean routes from Germany to the Atlantic Ocean, and only U-boats moved freely through the war zone. The Bismarck was ordered to break out into the Atlantic. Once in the safety of the open ocean, the battleship would be almost impossible to track down, all the while wreaking havoc on Allied convoys to Britain. Learning of its movement, Britain sent almost the entire British home fleet in pursuit. On May 24, the British battlecruiser Hood and battleship Prince of Wales intercepted it near Iceland. In a ferocious battle, the Hood exploded and sank, and all but three of the 1,400 crewmen were killed. The Bismarck escaped, but because it was leaking fuel, it fled for occupied France. On May 26, it was sighted and crippled by British aircraft, and on May 27, three British warships descended on the Bismarck and finished it off.
Wow. And on the 30th of May, 1942, during World War II, a 1,000-plane raid on the German city of Cologne was launched by Great Britain. Almost 1,500 tons of bombs rained down in 90 minutes, delivering a devastating blow to the Germans' medieval city as well as its morale. On this night, Cologne was besieged. 600 acres of the city sustained heavy damage. 45,000 Germans were left homeless. 469 were killed. The chemical and machine tool industries, the main targets of the raid, were rendered useless. The cost to the British, 40 bombers, or less than 4% of the total that participated.
It's a lot of bombs, Colonel. On 28 May 1951, during the Korean War, United Nations forces drove the communists back across the 38th parallel on most of the Korean battlefields.
And on 27 May 1965, during the Vietnam War, augmenting the vital role of being played by U.S. aircraft carriers whose planes participated in many of the raids over South and North Vietnam, warships from the 7th Fleet began to fire on Viet Cong targets in the central area of South Vietnam. At first, the gunfire was limited to 5-inch gun destroyers, but other ships would eventually be used in the mission. The ships were assigned from the fleet's cruiser destroyer command, from carrier escort units and amphibious units, from the Navy Coast Guard Coastal Surveillance Force, and from the Royal Australian Navy. Ships and weapons included the battleship New Jersey with 16-inch guns, cruisers with 8-inch and 5-inch guns, destroyers with 5-inch guns, and inshore fire support ships and landing ships. Naval gunfire support and shore bombardment ranged the entire coast of Vietnam, but most of the operations took place off the coast of the northernmost region of South Vietnam, just south of the demilitarized zone. During the 1968 Tet Offensive, Task Group 70.8 had as many as 22 ships at a time on gun line, offering invaluable naval gunfire support to ground forces. On May 1972, as a part of Operation Linebacker 1, a 7th Fleet cruiser destroyer group bombarded targets near Haiphong along the North Vietnam coast, firing over 111,000 rounds at the enemy. One destroyer was hit by a MiG bombing attack, and 16 ships were hit by communist shore batteries, none of which were sunk.
Colonel, this is just a guess, but I'm thinking you probably called in air naval gunfire at one point in your combat in Vietnam.
I got supported by it. I didn't have to call it in. Yes.
Oh, they volunteered. That's great.
No, my boss called it in.
All right. And on 28 May 1984, President Ronald Reagan led a state funeral at Arlington National Cemetery at the Tomb of the Unknowns for an unidentified American soldier killed in the Vietnam War. The remains were unearthed in 1998 for DNA testing and possible identification. They were later identified as those of Air Force First Lieutenant Michael Blassie and were sent to St. Louis for hometown burial.
And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat, but if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, it happened around 7:30 p.m. on New Year's Day at a Taco Bell in Akron, Ohio. A masked man entered the restaurant and approached employees at gunpoint. One of the employees ran and hid in the freezer and called the police. The robber fired the gun at another employee. That's when a 21-year-old worker pulled his own gun and shot back at the suspect, striking him in the chest. The robber then fled with an undisclosed amount of money. It's unclear if the Taco Bell employee who was carrying a gun will be reprimanded, but no charges are expected to be filed.
Thanks, Colonel. By and large, most major corporations do not allow their employees to carry guns or weapons of any kind while on work premises. Here's how that happens. Every corporation has an employee handbook, and all handbooks are reviewed by lawyers who almost always advise the corporate owners and managers to add the "no weapons allowed" statement in order to protect the company from liability should an employee hurt someone using their weapon. In most states, however, it's not a violation of law when an employee violates this rule. It's simply a corporate policy violation. Now, the company has every right to make these policies by virtue of their property rights. And this is a sticky topic because property rights are bumping heads with Second Amendment rights. When an employee saves lives with his gun, this puts the company in a tenuous position because they are faced with two choices: allowing their workers to break the rules or to fire them. It's seldom good public relations when a company punishes an employee for saving human lives. It's unclear what will happen in this case, but time will tell. When I worked at a major corporation, I chose to sometimes violate the no guns rule simply because I believed my life to be worth more than my job. I can always get another job, but I only get one life. However, make sure you research the carry laws in your own state before carrying at work. If you choose to carry at work, then I highly recommend you carry using deep concealment so that no one ever sees your gun. I also advise you to never tell another employee what you are doing. Many employees have lost their jobs simply because they told one person they were carrying a gun, and then that person told another person, and that person told another person, etc., etc. And soon Human Resources is calling you into the office. I'm not advising you either way. It's your own personal decision. However, I'm certain the Taco Bell employees who survived this robbery are grateful that one of their coworkers violated the employee handbook long enough to save their lives. Frontlines of Freedom salutes this Taco Bell employee for his courage and great marksmanship. We truly hope that Taco Bell has the wisdom to treat this person like the hero that he is.
Yes, sir. Our movie of the month is the crazy movie, The Life of Death. We just reviewed it. You can still go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. Next week is Frontlines of Freedom's 17th anniversary show. General Paul Valley will present Stand Up for America, U.S., and Skip will interview me about my time in combat. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation, and now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom this Memorial Day weekend. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.